Chapter 10. The Ride, the Revenge, and the Defiant Woman. Saturday, June the 1st, 1191. No one moved. Each of them was stunned in different ways. Marion was stunned that she'd finally snapped and hit the guy. Will was stunned to see a fair lady be so violent. Adam was stunned at Marion's request to be chaperoned, and Sir Guy was stunned because he'd just been hit on the head with a wine bottle. "A new chaperone, my lady," Adam said, finally breaking the silence. The lady climbed down from the carriage, still gripping the wine bottle in her hand. She never knew, it might come in handy again. Her eyes flitted between the men in the red hoods. "I assume you're here to rob me," she asked calmly.
"Yeah, well, that's normally how this goes," Will replied, scratching the back of his neck.
Marion cocked her head at the younger man before walking up to Adam, brandishing her bottle.
"Well, the least you could do is escort me to Nottingham. I don't want to be accosted by any other outlaws. After you're done, I'll have nothing left to offer."
Adam couldn't argue with that.
"Well, it seems only fair, my lady," he said, smiling. "And you can put the bottle down. I'll see you safely to the city."
"Where's my coachman?" she asked, still not lowering the bottle.
"Oh, we knocked him out and threw him in that bush," Will gestured to the gooseberry.
They spent a good few minutes retrieving the coachman and even longer lifting him and Sir Guy, whom Marion was sorely tempted to leave, into the carriage. Adam sent Will back into the forest to tell the others of the latest developments. He then swung himself up to the coachman's perch, only to find Lady Marion sitting in his place. Adam was relieved to see that she had relinquished the wine bottle to take the horse's reins. "I'll conduct us from here, if you don't mind," she said. Adam didn't argue with her. He relished the warm night air and the opportunity to sit next to her and just enjoy the ride. They spent the first few minutes of their journey in silence until Marion, seemingly not able to take it anymore, burst out, "It's no wonder you outlaws are popping up all over the country." Adam looked at her quizzically. "It's desperation at meeting opportunity. Now every hungry mouth from York to Dover thinks they can chance a roadside robbery, what with nearly every man of fighting age off with King Richard, or fawning over the prince as he makes his procession. My father could only get that sorry excuse of a knight to escort me, his only daughter, to Nottingham." Marion was clearly vexed. "You did make for quite an easy target. Not even a servant or a lady to wait on you. We do have plenty of servants, of course, but my father had a bad fall last year and needs help doing nearly everything."
"There'll be servants in Nottingham, my dear. Sir Guy will see you safe," Marion continued in what Adam could only assume was an excellent impression of her father.
"Money's tight," said Marion, "and not just for the poor, even though they have been hit hardest. Did you know John's even taxing water? He drained a lake into six wells, then charged the peasants to use them." She held the reins in one hand and gestured passionately with the other. Adam thought this lady seemed very well informed.
"Yes, I hear this John is seizing a lot. Money, lands, women," he said innocuously. He snuck a glance at her, checking to see if his words had had the desired effect.
"Women?" Marion looked concerned.
"I've heard that John is bringing a woman to Nottingham in chains." This was no time for half measures. "I'd like to save her, if it's true."
"Do you know this woman?" Marion asked.
"If it's who I think it is."
Adam slowly pulled down his hood. "Yes." Marion looked thoughtful.
"I've heard nothing on the road," she said, glancing at him, taking in his face for the first time.
Tight, curly black hair, dark skin, and his eyes. His eyes were almost grey. It was a good, if unusual, face. She trusted it.
"I can ask around in the city when I arrive."
Adam felt sure she would. A
"'It's very kind of you, Lady Marian. "'I certainly couldn't bring myself to rob you now. "'But if anyone asks, I did. "'Got a reputation to maintain "'and a band of brothers to report back to.' "'He smiled, and so did she. "'An outfit of outlaws. How enchanting. "'Well, if I hear anything about your lady friend, "'I'll place a white flower in my window.' My room's usually on the top floor, on the tower closest to the city walls. As Marian spoke, the carriage rolled up to the top of a small hill. The trees began to thin, and the castle and its surrounding city loomed large before them. I will look for it. And with that, Adam donned his hood and leapt into a tree above them. "'I would have stopped to let you off,' the maid called back, she was trying not to laugh. "'I know,' came a voice from the trees. "'I just thought this was a bit more befitting of an outlaw. Farewell!' Marian guided her horses through the city. She had spent so much time there as a girl that she didn't need to stop for directions. When she finally arrived at the castle gates, a lithe man with a thatch of straw hair, looked down at her through a murder hole. "'Who goes there?' he called out. "'Lady Marian! We were attacked in the forest. Brave Sir Guy and my coachman were accosted. They're in the cab. I fear for their lives. Open the gate!' she pleaded convincingly.
"'What the fuck? Where am I? Get out!'
The raised voices seemed to have woken her sleeping beauty. "'Oh, thank the Lord, he's alive.' The drawbridge lowered and Marian drove the carriage into the courtyard. It was just as she had remembered it. She and her father had often stayed in Nottingham throughout her childhood. This castle had been her playground. She had ridden her first pony around this stone square and played hide-and-seek with the stable hands. The man who took the reins from her now, though, was a stranger. So were the two guards who hauled the groggy knight and her still unconscious coachman out of the cab. She made her way inside the cavernous entrance hall. It had a chill to it, despite the large fires burning in the grates.
"Oh, my dear Lady Marian,"
the Sheriff of Nottingham appeared, flanked by two servants who hurried past him to fetch her accoutrements from outside. The sheriff was just as she remembered him, well-groomed, a broad smile, yet something of the wolf about him.
"'I have been told you were attacked in the forest. Please know I am planning to burn it down as we speak.'
She gave him her hand, as was expected, and he bent low to kiss it. "'I would hope so, sir. I hate to think what would have happened.' Marian was interrupted by the sound of vomiting. "'If brave Sir Guy hadn't been there to scare them off.' The sheriff's eyes flicked over to the now green knight. "'Quite,' he said, his smile tightening on his lips. Marian could see the disgust that the sheriff had for the knight's dishevelled state. She doubted the sheriff had ever been tipsy, let alone drunk.' She remembered what her father had said about him.
"'He only drinks as much as is expected of him. Never a drop more. I don't trust a man like that.'
Even though Marian was also wary of the sheriff, she, unlike her father, was of the opinion that nothing good came of men getting deep in their cups.
"'Sheriff, I demand that you form a posse,'
Sir Guy wheezed, the mentioning of his name having stirred him.
"'I will lead it. I will kill that villainous scum with my bare hands. I just need to get my strength back.'
The knight looked like he might be sick again, but he managed to hold it down. Marian looked to the sheriff and raised her brow. The sheriff reluctantly turned to Sir Guy.
"'Your bravery lives up to your reputation, Sir Guy. "'The men are already being assembled. "'Once we discover the whereabouts of these criminals, "'you may lead the raid.'
This news would have greatly pleased Sir Guy if he hadn't just started to snore. The sheriff rolled his eyes and waved to the guards who had brought him in. Put the brave knight to bed. As the guards dragged Sir Guy away, the sheriff returned his gaze to Marian. And you, dear child, you must be exhausted too. We have your old room made up for you. Would you permit me to walk you to your chamber?
Thank you, Sheriff. Marian gave a small curtsy, and they fell into step together.
So, was it the man himself? The sheriff asked casually.
Who?
The famous Robin Hood. The sheriff gave a derisive laugh. I'm surprised his infamy didn't make it to you on the road. He is the leader of the band of degenerates that attacked you.
It was hardly a band, Marian said, as they made their way up the staircase, doing their best to avoid the small puddles that Sir Guy had left for them. It was just two men with cheap bows and red hoods. Marian had learnt from a young age that if you were going to keep a secret, giving half-truths was better than inventing whole lies.
Yes. Well, these men have been causing me trouble for weeks. I have tried to exercise restraint, but I'm afraid the attack on you might be the last straw.
The sheriff twisted his well-oiled beard.
But enough of outlaws. What of you? It has been too long since you graced Nottingham with your presence.
Oh, much the same. Though I have taken over more of the duties of father's estate, he hasn't felt up to much since the horse threw him last spring. They arrived at a familiar corridor. She knew that it led to a chamber where a warm and comfortable bed would be waiting for her.
I was very sorry to hear that. The only consolation I can take is that now we have a beautiful maid here for the royal visit in his stead. The sheriff paused delicately. You are still a maid. I would take it as a personal slight if I had been denied a wedding invitation.
Marian managed a convincing laugh. Yes, I am still a maid. It's hard to find a husband when the king takes every eligible man 1,000 leagues away. What about you, sir? Are you still a maid?
The sheriff took the jest well, pulling a face of fake anguish. Oh, alas, I am. All that I have to keep my bed warm is an ever-growing blanket of papers requiring my signature. Here we are.
They had reached the door to her room. The sheriff opened it gallantly, and Marian stepped through the threshold. This room was cosy. The fire burnt brightly. The large bed was adorned with furs and blankets. All of her possessions were already there, waiting for her.
I hope everything is satisfactory to my lady, said the sheriff, hand still on the handle.
It's wonderful, thank you. It's like coming home. She smiled at the man with the pointed beard and wolf-like eyes.
Well, if there's anything I can do to make it more so, just say the word.
Well, Marian paused. The sheriff waited. When I was a girl, I used to go to the castle gardens and pick those beautiful white roses for my dear mother. If it's not too much trouble, I would dearly like to have some for my chamber during my stay, to remind me of her.
It shall be done. The sheriff bowed low. Good night, Lady Marian. He gently closed the door behind him. The sheriff's smile dropped almost instantly. He let out a sigh and rubbed his temples with his long fingers. I am surrounded by idiots, he whispered to himself.
He needed to get back to his room. Some quiet bedtime counting would soothe his frayed nerves. But before he could even take a step towards his dark chambers, footsteps approached.
Sorry to disturb you, sir.
His master-at-arms, Reginald Waxley, strode up to him. He was breathing heavily, and the sheriff made a mental note to replace him.
One's master of arms shouldn't be winded from climbing 2 flights of stairs.
Yes, he said curtly, continuing to massage his throbbing head.
We've had a message, sir, from Royal Procession. You've been summoned.
Oh, marvellous, said the sheriff through gritted teeth. This was going to be a long night.
Around 60 miles away, moonlight washed over a sea of tents, making up the royal procession. There were still a few revellers around a campfire singing old songs, but for the most part everything was quiet and still. No one saw the man in the travelling cloak winding between the cloth pavilions. He nimbly made his way through to a tent that had been set up a little further away from the others. The 2 guards that stood sentry, torches in hand, didn't move a muscle as he slid between them. With deft fingers, he undid the fastenings to the opening flap and let the moonlight pour into the darkness within.
I thought you might be thirsty, said Prince John,
taking down his cloak's hood to reveal his pointed crown. He raised the wineskin he had been carrying and shook it so the liquid sloshed around. Even with the moonlight, John could barely see the woman before him. This tent had been the first to be set up when they'd made camp, as it had been at every stop on their journey from London. The thick oak stake had been hammered deep into the ground first. Then the blacksmith had checked the iron rings that decorated it for any wear or tear. Only then was she removed from her box. Custom-built silver chains carefully pulled through each ring until she was bound tight. John's eyes adjusted to the gloom, and he could just make out a few flashes of her long silvery white hair, her head held low in exhaustion. She had been through a lot today.
I am not a violent man, but I know violent men, he said, taking a step into the tent and removing the stopper from the skin. One of them lives in Nottingham and is coming for you as we speak. He's going to see just how many lives you have.
John thought he saw a tiny tremor from the bound woman. The tips of that silver mane had twitched. He was sure of it. Unnerved, he took a long drink of wine and found courage.
Or just tell me what I need to know, and I'll set you free, he said,
with a smile of practice, but not of warmth. King John was not a good man. The quiet, eerily calm voice came from the slumped figure in the dark. King John was not a good man. He had his little ways. And sometimes no one spoke to him for days and days and days.
John opened his mouth to respond, but she continued, When I get out of here, I'm not going to kill you.
John heard her chains clink softly as she spoke. I'm going to turn you into a joke, a petty villain, something children laugh at and boo. Her chain links started scraping together, remembered only as a phony, a pretender, and a coward.
John dropped his wineskin. He'd had enough. The sheriff could take over the interrogation on the morrow.
Burn her again,
he said as he left. Without hesitating, the 2 guards with the lit torches made their way into the tent. She lay on the hard, dry ground. Her body was a wreck of charred flesh and splintered bones. If only she could die. But sadly, that was not a gift she possessed. And she had to hold on to hope, her only hope, that Adam would find her. She had got her message out, and he would now be running to set her free. She hoped. If the message had been delivered as dictated, Adam would think he was coming to save his wife, Would he still want to set her free when he found out that she had deceived him? The woman whom the first man cares most deeply for is being taken to Nottingham Castle. She will be taken in chains by the ruler of England. Adam was always so optimistic. He would assume it was Eve. She was about to break a heart to save her suffering. Vivian tried to release a scream of fury and frustration, but no sound was made. Her throat had turned to ash.
You've been listening to Evergreen, Chapter 10, written by Sam Russell and read by Catherine Russell. We have an exciting announcement. We're going to be doing a live event as part of the Streatham Literature Festival on Sunday the 10th of October at 2:30 p.m. with a Q&A as well as a live reading from Catherine. A ticket link will be in the description below, and we'd love to see as many of our listeners there as possible. If you enjoyed this chapter, wherever you're listening, please subscribe, give us a rating and a review so we can get this story into more people's ears. And if you really enjoyed it and want to support this project, you can also do so on our Ko-fi page. All details available on our Twitter account, at EvergreenBook1. That's at EvergreenBook1. The next chapter comes out on October the 18th. Thanks for listening.